Sunday Feast class. I'd like to ask all of you to bless me so I can say something relevant and appropriate and helpful for all of you and purifying for myself. I chose a topic today, which is finding your balance. I thought this was a relevant topic because, as you all know, life today is quite complicated, and there's always something or other occurring to throw us off balance, right? If it's not one thing, it's another. We think we have a plan for the day's activities, and then something comes up, right? We thought we were going to have a fall festival yesterday. All the preparations were made way far in advance, and then there's going to be a tropical storm, which never really fully manifested, right? So it's always something, either on a micro scale, in our own individual lives, in our temple, community, in the world. There's so many little upsets that happen all the time that can just throw us off kilter. And then another aspect of balance is balancing out the different parts of our lives. Because most of us, if not all of us, operate in different spheres, right? There's work, there's your sadhana, there's family, there's, you know what all there is. There's many things going on all at once, and we need to kind of balance those so that we don't devote too much time to one thing and neglect another thing, because all of them are important. Okay. So as a little introduction to this topic, I'd like to ask you to engage in a little activity, if you're up for it. Yeah?
Yeah.
You're okay?
Yes.
Feeling strong?
Sure.
Okay. So everyone, please stand up. Should I stand up too?
I'll do it with you, and then
you won't feel like I'm just enjoying doing this for entertainment. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to balance on one leg in different conditions. And then I want you to, while you're doing this, be conscious of how it feels, of your experience of balancing in each different situation. Okay, so you don't need to do anything, you know, like Dhruva Maharaj, any like yoga posture. You can just lift up one leg and stand like that. Okay, but for now, so put your 2 feet on the floor to start with. Get ready. So the first way is that you're going to do it with your eyes closed. So please, everybody, close your eyes and just stand on one leg. Doesn't matter if you fall, because no one's going to see you. Okay? Everybody did it? Did anyone chicken out and not try it? Did you all try it?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so now this time, I want you to do the same thing, stand on one leg, but with your eyes open. And look around the room to see how everybody else is doing. See if, you know, like you're doing better than the others, you know, who's falling, who's like really cool with balancing. Okay, did you kind of check everybody out? Okay, put your foot back down. Now, this time, I want you to find something which is in front of you, which is completely still, not moving. Probably the best thing is the deities. And just find something specific to look at, only one thing, not all over the altar, but just one thing that you're going to stare at that thing. And while your vision is focused on that non-moving thing, balance on one leg. And while you're balancing, notice the muscles in your ankle and your foot, what they're doing. What's going on down there, your lower leg. Okay, everybody got the experience? All right, put your foot down. Now, put your hand on the shoulder of the person next to you or on the wall or something solid. And stand on one leg. And pay attention again to the muscles in your ankle and your foot. And see the contrast to last time when you weren't holding on to anybody? Is it different? Okay, great. So everybody can sit down. Thank you all for your enthusiastic participation. All right, so now we're going to talk about what all that meant in relation to our lives. So first of all, what was the most difficult way to balance?
Eyes closed.
Eyes closed. Okay, that was pretty much unanimous, right?
Yeah.
So eyes closed means darkness, right? Even if there's a light on, when your eyes are closed, you can't see anything. So darkness in Sanskrit is tama, or ignorance. So a person in the mode of ignorance, they're in darkness about who they are. They don't know who they are. They don't know what the aim of life is. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what to do, what not to do. And for them, balance is difficult. In fact, it's not even really an issue because they're not even really trying for balance. Because in order to even try for balance, you have to have some reason to balance. You know, you have to be kind of like going somewhere. It's like, you know, you have to if you're riding a bicycle, you have to balance on your bicycle because you want to get somewhere. But if you're not going anywhere, if you're just kind of like lying in the gutter of life, then, you know, what do you need to balance? So balance for a person in the mode of ignorance is practically non-existent because they're just sort of being, they're just kind of blowing in the wind, or you could say they're being tossed about by the waves of time. So then if we want to be balanced in life, we have to steer clear of the mode of ignorance. Then what was the next most difficult? More difficult one.
Looking around.
Looking around. Okay, so looking around is compared to the mode of passion. Because a person in the mode of passion is very concerned with their self-image, especially how they measure up compared to other people. Right? There's a lot of competition, there's ambition, you want to achieve something, and there's absorption in the external world. The world of sense objects and chasing after those sense objects. So when our attention is fixed in the external world of sense objects, then it's difficult to maintain balance because the external world is always changing. The material world is just by nature changing. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Adi Bhutam Kshara Bhava, that the nature of matter, of the material manifestation, is kshara, changeable. It's always changing. And we can see the weather is changing, the political situation is changing, the economic situation is changing, people change, right? Their moods are always changing. So we never know, even when we talk to somebody, we don't know how they're going to react from one moment to the next. So it's very, if we're always out there, then we're always going to be kind of like, shaky. Then the next one that was more easy, this was much more easy, right? When you're focusing on a fixed object. Yeah. So when we focus on something that's not moving, then we can actually be more still. But what were the muscles in your ankle and your foot doing while you were, even while you were balancing, while fixing your vision on something? Adjusting. It wasn't still, was it? So it looked like you were still, but there was a lot going on actually. Muscles go pulling this way, then pulling back that way, pulling this to the back, pulling to the front. They were kept pulling to the center. So then this is compared to the mode of goodness, where the person actually is aware of what the center is. Because in order to keep balance, we need to be focused on the center. And it has to, and our center is that thing which is not moving. So what is it about us that's not moving, that's not changing? The soul, right? That's what Krishna says. I'll just read this because it's so clear here. In 2:16, Krishna says, those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. And then Krishna gets even more emphatic about it a little later in text 2:23. He says, the soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can neither be burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. So the soul, so we can, when we balanced, when we could fix our vision on something that was not moving. So that non-moving thing, that unchangeable thing within us is the soul, which is actually us. We actually don't change. Our bodies change, our minds change, our intellect is always adjusting, looking into the future, making plans, changing the plan. But we actually are not affected by all of these changes. And so to be balanced in life, it's very important that we are conscious of who we are, that we're conscious of our unchanging spiritual selves. And that the material changes in life, externally in the world, and also internally with our own bodies and minds, don't actually affect us. And if we know that, then we can actually be peaceful. We can actually be peaceful no matter what's happening. We can just sort of, you know, when life kind of gets crazy, something comes up, something goes wrong, there's some catastrophe, or we have a, you know, serious health issue, or someone in our family is in trouble, or a friend, you know, has problems. So these things can ordinarily be very upsetting. But if we center back on the fact that I am an eternal, unchangeable spiritual being, then we can kind of step back. We can detach ourselves from what's going on and just observe. It's like watching a movie. So, has anybody here ever cried while watching a movie? Have you ever laughed? Have you ever become frightened? Okay, so pretty much everybody has, right? Why do we do that? Because we know the movie's not real. We know it's just a completely, like, Hollywood concoction. So why do we get so emotionally involved that we actually shed tears? The music. The music is a killer, right? We identify with the character. Yeah, that's what it is. Because if we heard the music just on the radio, it wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't burst into tears. But we actually identify with the character. We identify with the situation the character's in, and we start feeling like that we're in the same situation. So that's exactly what we do in life. We identify with what's going on in the external world, the experience that we're in, and we identify with our bodies and how our bodies are feeling, and we also identify with our emotions and our emotional responses to events and interactions, whereas none of those things actually have any substantial reality in relation to the soul. It's a very difficult concept to relate to because we're so used to identifying with these things, but actually it's a fact. And, you know, Krishna talks about it in the Bhagavad Gita, that the soul doesn't change. These things, there's that verse that says that even while sitting, standing, walking, evacuating, opening and closing the eyes, he actually does nothing at all. Because it's only the senses interacting with their objects, and the soul is not affected by any of those things. So it's a very practical skill to learn, especially because, like I was saying, that life is just so complicated and relationships are so complicated, and we can really get disturbed and depressed and upset and, you know, angry at situations that we happen to find ourselves in. But if we can just remove ourselves and come back to our center, that I'm a soul, then we can be peaceful. Because we can understand that that although we're seeing so many crazy things going on, the seer and the seen are different. We don't identify with what we're seeing. Okay? So then we can be peaceful. But then, is being peaceful in life enough? Is it enough to just go through life being undisturbed and aloof and, you know, knowing that I'm a spirit soul and everything is all good. Is that enough?
No.
No. Why not? What else do you want? Relationships. Yeah, we want relationships. We want to do things. We want to have fun. We want to love. We want to be loved. We want to be active. We have all these spiritual needs, actually. So one thing is to come to the level of goodness and be like, yes, I'm a soul, everything's good. But then that's really just the beginning. Because knowing I'm a soul, we have to know, well, what does the soul do? And then to know what the soul is meant to do, then we have to know what the soul, the nature of the soul. And so Krishna says that in chapter 15, text 7. He says, Mamaya Vamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. He says that this living entities in conditional life are my eternal fragmental parts. So we're actually parts of Krishna. We're parts of God. And so we have the same qualities as Krishna. And if we look at the qualities of Krishna, they're pretty amazing. And the nature, so we're like, you could say that we're like, and Prabhupada uses a few analogies to show this. One of them is like a drop of water from the ocean. So if you take a little drop out of the ocean, it has all the same chemical composition as the great ocean, but it's tiny. And when you take it out of the ocean and you just hold it in your hand, it will evaporate very quickly. Because it is so tiny. Or the other analogy he uses is like a spark from a fire. So there's Krishna is the big fire, and then a little piece of, there's a crackle, and then a tiny little piece of wood that's burning flies out. So we're that tiny little spark. And then although we have the qualities of fire, when we're in contact with the fire, as soon as the spark flies out, within seconds, it just extinguishes and becomes cold, like a cold piece of ash sitting there on the ground. So then the way to actually revive our spiritual qualities and revive our spiritual activities is to connect in a spiritual way to Krishna. And that's the meaning of yoga. It's putting the spark, putting that little piece of wood that was once burning, that's gone cold, back into the fire. And that's, that's yoga. Yoga means to link or to connect. So we need to connect by Krishna. And the best process is bhakti yoga. As Krishna says, yogi namapi sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shravanam bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinking of me within himself and rendering transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. That's Krishna's opinion. So then, Chaitanya Charitamrita also talks about the nature of the soul. Lord Chaitanya says, Jivera Swarupoya Krishnara Nityadas. So then, knowing that we're parts and parcels of Krishna, and knowing that we're also Krishnara Nityadas, that we're the servants of Krishna, then it becomes easy. Then we know what to do. We just need to connect to Krishna, and we'll be centered, but not self-centered. Because in the mode of goodness, it's like you're centered on the, you know what your center is, you know you're a soul, and you can actually be centered on the self and be peaceful. But another reason why that's not satisfying is because it's self-centered. It's still all about me, and I'm a soul, and I'm good, and I'm peaceful, and, you know, everything's cool in my life. But that's self-centeredness is not satisfying. In fact, it's kind of like people don't like people who are self-centered, right? So then we have to be centered on the self without being self-centered. And the way to do that is to focus our attention on Krishna through the process of bhakti yoga, to connect with Krishna, and to serve Krishna, and in that way, we can water the root of the tree and make everything good. Well, everybody satisfied, including ourselves. So that holding on to Krishna, moving the center of our attention to Krishna, is like when you were holding onto the shoulder of somebody else. So what was happening? It was much easier to balance, right? I mean, obviously that's kind of a no-brainer. But what was going on with the muscles in your feet? More relaxed. It was almost like they were still, right? If you had a really solid person, or if you're holding to the wall, actually not moving at all. It's just completely no issues. So when we hold on to Krishna, when we take shelter of Krishna, then it all becomes so much easier. It's like, it's easier to balance, of course, because you're holding on to Krishna. But another aspect of it is that the little things that throw you off are less significant. They become less problematic. The little problems in life are minimized by Krishna's grace. So I'd just like to read a verse here to confirm that. And this is from the 18th chapter. I'll read 57 and 58. So, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. And such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If however you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. I'll read the purport here. This is very nice. That's why I can't give a class properly without reading a purport. So here we go. A person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. The foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety. For one who acts in Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna becomes the most intimate friend. He always looks after his friend's comfort, and he gives himself to his friend, who is so devotedly engaged, working 24 hours a day to please the Lord. Therefore, no one should be carried away by the false ego of the bodily concept of life. One should not falsely think himself independent of the laws of material nature or free to act. He is already under strict material laws. But as soon as he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is liberated, free from the material perplexities. One should note very carefully that one who is not active in Krishna consciousness is losing himself in the material whirlpool, in the ocean of birth and death. No conditioned soul actually knows what is to be done and what is not to be done. But a person who acts in Krishna consciousness is free to act because everything is prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master. So here he's saying that Krishna is saying, if you just become conscious of me, if you just depend on me, and all of your activities, just depend on me, just hold on to me. And then, of course, it's the material world. There will be upsets, there will be unexpected things that throw us off. But Krishna says, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. Just keep holding on. Just stay under my shelter. So I really like this point. And then the other side was, but if you act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So sometimes when problems arise, we think, yeah, I can do it. I can solve this problem. You know, I'm smart. I'm strong. I'm, you know, I've got money. I've got contacts. I can do it myself. And that's kind of like acting through false ego, that on my own strength I can push through and, you know, get things done. And when we get in that kind of mode that I'm the doer, I'm the controller, I'm, you know, the one who's going to make it happen, then we get into problems. Our problems tend to confound upon each other. But if we just take shelter of Krishna, then everything becomes so much easier, and we can fly smoothly through all of these things with Krishna at the helm. So this is, Krishna makes it all easy. We just have to remember that. And then also putting Krishna in the center of our lives, it tends to, all those different spheres that we operate in become harmonized. So, when our individual lives are centered around Krishna, then our sadhana will become very important to us. So we'll make it a priority that gets done. And when we try to help our families to become Krishna conscious, then our families will also support us in our sadhana because they too understand the value of it. So when they see us chanting, they won't be, you know, distracting us, or, you know, they'll also be inclined to share spiritual activities with us. So that's a big help. But then it's no longer a conflict that, oh, is it that I'm going to spend time with my family, or is it that I'm going to do my sadhana or go to the temple or go to the festival or do some service? Because then you've kind of got your family, you know, together with you, and you're all doing the service together. You're all doing sadhana together. You're going to the temple and to the festival together. And so it's all harmonious. And then the other big aspect is work. So this is America. Everybody has to work. And so often work can be a big challenge, because it can be hard to, you know, balance our work with our Krishna consciousness. And really the way to do it is to just make a big effort, like a conscious effort, to be more Krishna conscious at work. So even if you have a, like, totally, you know, outside, you know, so-called karmi job, like an ordinary job in the material world, because you got to do that to make money, that's fine. Krishna says everybody's got to work. You can't even maintain your physical body without work. So it's better to work than not to work. But actually Krishna gives a lot of very good instructions in the Bhagavad Gita about work, because he's talking to Arjuna about his work. So I just want to refer to some of these references. And the first one that I thought of was 9:27. So this is a famous verse. Yad karosi yad ashnasi yad jahosi didasi yat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kirusva madarpanam. That whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer a giveaway, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So in this first line of the purport, Prabhupada said, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. So I thought that was a very practical instruction, and it's something that we need to meditate on, how to apply that at our work. So we go to the workplace, and it may not be something which automatically stimulates our Krishna consciousness. But what we have to do is find some way to remember Krishna at work. And it may be something like, it will require creativity, right? I mean, I'm sure most of you do it already. Like if you work at an office, if you work at a computer, you put Krishna there on your, you know, computer, or, you know, pictures or something. When I was doing book distribution, I remember one, I was thinking about this when I was, this concept of something that triggers our remembrance of Krishna when we're outside. So I would make it a point to stand outside one store, that the front of the store was like this grayish blue color, which reminded me of Krishna's complexion. So it wasn't the best spot to work, but when things were getting tough and I felt like I really needed to take shelter of Krishna, I would go and stand in front of that shop. And I would just look at it and be like, I would just see Krishna's face in the, you know, like see the color and Krishna's color, and just picture Krishna's face there just looking at me and blessing me, and, you know, it would make it easier. So like this, we need to kind of manufacture our own upadis. You know, upadi is something which stimulates remembrance of Krishna. And Krishna gives us, in the Bhagavad Gita, he's so kind, he gives us all these different ways that we can remember him. You know, that he's the taste of water, he's the light of the sun and the moon, he's sound and ether, he's the intelligence of the intelligent, the strength of the strong. And then there's another, in chapter 10, one of the chapters, then he's saying that, you know, of this I am this, of fish I am the shark, of stars I am the moon, of, right, all these things. So we can meditate on those things to get ideas for how to see Krishna in the world. And then we can also create our own little stimuluses. I mean, you all work in different scenarios, so I don't know exactly what your situation is, but just really meditate on how you can see Krishna in the situation. And try to identify, like make a conscious effort to identify things which could somehow trigger remembrance of Krishna. And then whenever you see that, then remember Krishna, you know, like, oh, that's the thing that's meant to trigger my remembrance. And then when you get in the habit of doing that, every time you see it, you'll remember Krishna. It works like that. You'll just get in a habit. And then the more things you can identify in your workplace that could, you know, if it's the color of the thing or the shape of it, maybe it looks like a lotus petal or just any little thing that could be indirectly signifies something about Krishna. I just do this all the time. It's a really practical thing to do. And it's kind of cute. And then you're sort of walking past the thing. You're at work, you're with other people that you work with who are not devotees, and you just sort of walk past that thing and you're just like, yeah, Krishna, I know, you're there for me. You see that thing. So it's good. And another way to spiritualize our work is to spiritualize our attitude towards the results of our work. Because we work for money, let's face it, right? And so in relation to our money, Krishna also says, yajjuhosi didasiyat. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. So Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. So we have our families, we have our needs and our expenses and our bills to pay. The Prabhupada says, any surplus money, you know, don't spend it on, you know, a luxurious vacation or a cruise in the Caribbean. Just give it to me. So the more we sort of, sacrifice our little sense gratification and give that money to Krishna conscious projects, different things that we can donate to, or engage it directly ourselves in Krishna service, then the more our work becomes spiritual. And the more while we're at work earning that money, we're thinking, yeah, I'm earning this money for Krishna. I'm going to use it for this project. I'm going to do it to help these devotees. I'm going to buy, you know, so many books and I'm going to, you know, sponsor the ghee lamps or sponsor the feast for the devotees. And so when you're working, you can be meditating on all the wonderful Krishna conscious things that you're going to do with that money that you're earning. And so you can really feel that actually I'm working for Krishna. And so again, Krishna's in the center. So when Krishna's in the center of our personal life, of our family life, of our work life, then everything becomes in balance. Because it's like, you know, it's like a pole that everything is kind of hanging on. And as long as that central pole is firmly rooted, then everything just works. Everything just kind of rotates nicely around that. I want to read another verse here in relation to work. Okay, let me read this verse. This is from the next text 28. So just after Krishna saying, you know, whatever you do, do it for me. He says, in this way you will be freed from the bondage to work and its inauspicious and auspicious results. With your mind fixed on me and this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. So then the purport Prabhupada refers to Rupa Goswami's Yukta Varagya concept. Rupa Goswami says that as long as we're in this material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, that is called yukta vairagya. Actually situated in renunciation, such activities clear the mirror of the mind, and as the actor gradually makes progress in spiritual realization, he becomes completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, at the end, he becomes liberated, and this liberation is also specified. By this liberation, he does not become one with the Brahma-jyoti, but rather enters into the planet of the Supreme Lord. It is clearly mentioned here, Mam Upaishyasi, he comes to me, back home, back to Godhead. So he's just talking about working for Krishna and using the results of the work, of your work in Krishna's service. And in that way, you go back to Godhead. And so, it's so amazing. And what to speak of just yukta vairagya, in chapter 6, in the beginning, Krishna says that this is actually sannyas. He says, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. And I thought the Sanskrit here was interesting because he starts off saying, anashrita karma phalam. So karma, phalam, means the fruits of work. Phal means fruit and karma, work. So anashrita, so ashrita means shelter, actually. That's how Prabhupada translates it in the word for word. He says anashrita. So ashrita is shelter, and then anashrita is not, means not taking shelter. So not taking shelter in the fruits of your work. I thought this was an interesting concept, because as tiny souls, our nature is to take shelter of something. We have to take shelter of something or someone. And we see that in the material world, people tend to take shelter of karma phalam, of the results of their work. Right? They find security in having a good bank balance, in owning their own home, in having a nice car or a spare car, right? In having insurance, all these things that money can buy. So they actually take shelter in karma phalam in all these different ways. And so Krishna's advising against that, because when we take shelter in these things, those things are all temporary, and so it's just a matter of time before we're going to lose it and we're going to be thrown off balance. So then what do devotees take shelter in? Well, Krishna says that also. He says, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim ashrita. The same word, ashrita, shelter. And we take shelter of the divine energy, the divine nature, which is Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada says in the purport of 7:14, he said that this daivi yesha gunamai, this divine energy of Krishna's, daivim prakritim, is Srimati Radharani. And when we take shelter of Srimati Radharani, then she brings us under the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So I thought it was an interesting contrast between people who take shelter of karma phalam and mahatmas, great souls, who actually take shelter of Krishna. And and then he says, in this verse, mahatmanas tumam partha, the next part of it is, bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. So this is also nice. Bhajanti ananya manaso. So ananya manaso means that without deviation of the mind, that our mind is ananya, without any other point of focus. It's fixed on Krishna. So in this way, it's just the same thing coming back again, that in all of your activities, just depend on me. Work always under my protection. The great souls take shelter of the divine energy of Radha and Krishna and work without attachment to the results. They don't take shelter in the results of their work, but they use the results of their work as a medium by which they can take shelter of Krishna, by engaging that in Krishna's service. So this is one of the 26 qualities of a devotee, that Krishna Eka Sharanam, that the devotee's only shelter is Krishna. And Krishna instructs us to do that. Sarvadharmam Parityajya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Just take shelter of me alone. Make me your one shelter. And that's the way we can stand firm in this whirlpool of material life and not be shaken off balance. And it also harmonizes our relationships. Because when we put Krishna in the center, when we don't put Krishna in the center, let's say I'm the center of my own existence. You know, I'm thinking that I'm the center of it all. And if you're also thinking that you're the center of it all, then there's going to be conflict, right? Because I have my interests, you have your interests. I have things that I want to achieve, I have my things that I like to do, and you have your things that you would like to do, and they're probably different from what I would like to do, and your interests are different than my interests, and what you want to achieve is different from what I want to achieve. And so when we try to interact with each other, it's just conflict after conflict when we're self-centered like that. But when Krishna is in the center, then and we're both putting Krishna in the center, and when everyone that we associate with basically puts Krishna in the center, then it all becomes harmonized around Krishna. Because my interest is to serve Krishna, your interest is to serve Krishna, where I want to go is closer to Krishna, where you want to go is closer to Krishna, so we can just serve Krishna together and move forward together closer to Krishna. And that way, our relationships become harmonized and relatively peaceful. the different spheres of our lives, our work, our family, our sadhana, and our personal, our health, and things like that, all become harmonized and balanced. And our individual experiences in the world and the way that we handle upsets and, you know, these little unexpected things that happen also becomes more peaceful when we hold on to Krishna and make Krishna our only shelter and our go-to in any circumstance, good or bad, right? If something good happens, then we thank Krishna. If something bad happens, we consider it Krishna's mercy. Whatever's going on, we just relate it to Krishna, hold on to Krishna, and depend on Krishna. And by Krishna's grace, it all becomes easy, and we go back to Krishna. Jai! Okay. Are there any questions? Comments?
Question?
Yeah.
In the course of executing bhakti yoga, still there's the experience of the various...
In the course of executing bhakti yoga, just using Arjuna as the example, still he experienced many different emotions, and at different times, even in his service, he was, you know, seemingly overwhelmed with, you know, various emotions, etc. And not contradicting your point in terms of it harmonizing things, but there was still a lot of stuff. Yeah. What do we do with that emotional content that's happening in the meantime, so to speak?
Well, I mean, Bhagavad Gita is definitely Arjuna's on a journey, right? He starts off strongly identifying with the body, with bodily relationships, and that's what's throwing him off balance, right? So, and that's why Krishna is speaking all these things to him about the soul, that the soul is actually not touched by anything material, that you're in this battle, but you know, you're not really killing anybody, no one can kill you either. So why is there, and Krishna keeps saying, what is the need to lament? What is the need to lament? He says it like 3 or 4 times, right? But there's nothing to lament about. Everything is just fine because you're a soul. And all you need to do is serve me and remember me. He says that, what is that verse? Mam anusmara yudyamscha. That just remember me, go on remembering me and fight. So he's harmonizing these two things. That don't fight on the bodily concept of life. Don't fight for karma phalam. Don't fight for, getting something material or for fame, for reputation or any of those other things. Just fight as a spirit, as a soul, as an eternal being, knowing, taking shelter of me and your relationship with me and doing it for me. And when Arjuna understood that, then he said, all of my doubts are gone. All of my hesitations are gone. And I'm completely determined now to act according to your instruction. So it's just a question of understanding. It's all the things that I was just talking about is basically what Arjuna had to do to come to this point of balance in Krishna consciousness. And at the end, he achieves it. So that's also the journey that we need to take. And that's why Bhagavad Gita is so relevant and so important for us. And that's why Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita, because he speaks it to Arjuna, but he's speaking it for us, because this is what we need. This is actually like, you know, the manual for surviving the material world and not going crazy. Somebody else? Yes.
So thank you for your nice class. You mentioned during the class that when things go wrong in your life, the tendency of the false ego is to think that, okay, I can make this adjustment, I can make this right, I can make it work, but instead take shelter of Krishna. But then, especially in this month of Damodar, we learn that we have to make some effort.
Yes.
Because you're supposed to serve Krishna and engage him in our service. So where do you, how much?
Yeah, thank you. It's not that we don't make an effort, but it's that we don't act out of false ego, thinking that I don't need Krishna. I can do this on my own strength, that I am the, you know, savior of the situation. As soon as we start acting like that, then we run into difficulty. But we need to remember Krishna and fight. Right? It's not just sit back and remember Krishna and just depend on Krishna. But in all of your activities depend on me. So there's still activities. We still got to fight this battle. But we have to do it with Krishna. Remembering Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna and depending on him. Right? Like Mother Yashoda, she's trying to tie up Krishna to the mortar. But his two fingers too short. So the two fingers are her endeavor and Krishna's mercy. So those are the two things that we need to... Because God helps those who helps them help themselves. But if we don't make an effort to help ourselves, then Krishna's not so inspired. He wants to see our effort and our determination. And then when we show him that we really mean it, we're really trying, praying to him, counting on him, then he'll come through. He always does. Okay, something else? Was that a satisfactory answer? Thank you. No? Okay, good. Anyways, it's time, over time. So thank you all much. Thank you all very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Kartik Vrat ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.